Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Final hour of the show here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Looking forward to the conversation we're about to have. It's been a big night, a big last 24 hours for the Vanderbilt basketball program. And I'm looking at their Twitter feed right now. The only program in the country with a lottery pick in each of the last two NBA drafts is Vanderbilt. And so Darius Garland 2 years ago, Aaron Nesmith last night. So congratulations to Aaron. And, of course, Saban Lee also getting picked in the second round. So an excellent night. Head coach Jerry Stackhouse is on the line with us. And, Coach, I know it has to be a proud moment anytime you get a guy drafted, but to think of those two individuals with what they've been through, you know, fighting through adversity, working extremely hard to get better in the time that they were there, very, very rewarding, needless to say.
Absolutely, man. Really happy for those kids and their family. They really, really, you know, are the epitome of guys that really work for what they got. I mean, I think they put themselves in, you know, great position, you know, this in this year's draft to get drafted where they were. You know, obviously, Saban had a great year with made all second team all SEC. You know, Aaron was probably on his way to possibly being player of the year, you know, and then he got injured in the first game. But, you know, the real test was when adversity hit, how he was still a part of the team, you know, still was in the locker room, still in those guys' ears. And you saw him just continue to get better, even though it was a great opportunity for them to just say, okay, this, you know, Klee's out, Aaron's out. But I think Saban showed his leadership, and those guys rallied around them, and, man, you know, they put themselves in a great position. We were extremely happy for them.
You know, I was listening to Aaron last night in the interviews talking about some of the things that his parents taught him and, you know, his days on the – I think it was the farm, you know, getting up at 6 a.m. and working until 6 p.m., that work ethic that you build from those habits. So I'm curious, Coach, when you inherited him, you know, he'd been in the program for a year. Where did you try to work with him, and where did you see him make the most strides? Because he clearly got better from year one to year two.
Well, I just think he put a lot of work in the offseason, again, shooting the ball, and we just want to put him in positions to take advantage of his strengths. I mean, again, I was probably a little bit of a question mark was about him as a playmaker and a facilitator, but it's like, man, when you got a guy that shoots the ball like that, I want him at the end of plays and not the ones that set the table. So I think those are things that we talked about, him screening more. You know, him being a screener allowed him to come off of screens a little more clean and have a little bit more time. So I just think it's patience, you know, even when the play was for him. Not to rush into the plays, just let the, you know, watch the action, see if the ball got deflected from the point guard. Just little things like that that were, it gave him an opportunity to really, you know, catch the ball and put it in the basket, which he does at an amazing clip.
With Saban, too, one of the things that, that jumps off the page when you watch him play is his ability to penetrate and finish, get fouled. A lot of good things happen. It's hard for people to match up with him and keep him in front. But what's been interesting to me is to watch him every year get better at shooting the ball from the outside. I wouldn't call him a pure shooter when he first came in, but he's made huge strides in that area. Tell us how you tried to work with him in that area, because obviously that would be important for him at the next level.
Well, I think it was Saban. It was just a couple of little mechanic things. I mean, I think he was just so, you know, his release had him so far out of his circle. I mean, we talked about him imagining that there's a circle around you, and when you go up in your shot, that your arms and everything are staying inside of that circle. And I think he locked into that message, and you saw him just improve. And by the end of the year, he was, you know, taking shots off the bounce, you know, threes off the bounce. I still remember that Alabama game down in Tuscaloosa, and he was just, you know, I think he came full circle. I mean, it was some challenges during that year. Obviously, we wanted the role that we wanted for him coming off the bench. I mean, he had been a starter, but, you know, he embraced that. And I mean, to his credit, you know, we were a better team because of it. And then, you know, he still was able to showcase his talent by being our leading scorer and being our, you know, pretty much our most valuable player, you know, for, you know, as the season went on.
it's always a tricky thing for, you know, just regular fans and lovers of basketball to know exactly what pro scouts are looking for with outstanding college players. What are you seeing in how the game has evolved? Obviously, the game is stretched out. Almost everybody on the court these days in an NBA game can shoot and shoot threes, and the best shooters can step two, three, four steps behind the line and still make it. So with that being in mind, you know, what are you seeing, and then how does that translate for how you prepare guys in the college game?
Well, I just think it's, you know, we want to utilize the three because I feel like, again, I like that style. I like the floor being open and being able to have guys that can knock down shots. I mean, it creates openings for guys that penetrate. And, you know, we would still love to, you know, have a post presence. I mean, I still think the core of basketball still is played from the inside out. For the really good teams, they still find a way to get paint points, still find a way to get to the free throw line, even though they utilize the three and try to get more bang for your buck. I mean, I made a living off of mid-range, you know, jumpers, but now the game has changed to where, you know, that's okay. If that's the only result that you can get, you know, the mid-range, but if not, let's get more bang for our buck by maybe sidestepping, you know, behind the three-point line as opposed to taking one dribble in, and if we decide to put it on the floor, let's go ahead and get to the paint. Maybe we can create another opportunity on the weak side or put pressure on that defense and get to the free throw line like I mentioned before. But, you know, these guys, you know, Saban's athleticism, you know, is off the charts. And I just think his IQ, his understanding of pro sets and pro systems, I mean, I think all those guys, I mean, it's going to translate well for what's ahead of them. But, you know, just give a huge credit to our staff. I mean, I got grinders. I got guys that love to be in the gym, love to work with guys, and, you know, they help those kids get better and help put them in that position. Not only are guys on the court, but, you know, ancillary staff that, you know, supports them and with their academics, with, you know, everything from their player development away from the court. I think they did an unbelievable job, you know. So, and, you know, like I said, we inherited those kids, you know. We got to give Bryce and those guys credit for bringing them in here. I mean, they're super talented, but I think we saw them get better over the course of last year, and it put them in a great position to accomplish what they accomplished last night.
Vanderbilt basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse is here with us on Darren Donick and Chase. And one of the big compliments that you and your program got paid last year was from John Calipari after you played against them, when he said that, you know, he could tell that your kids were buying in and the culture was starting to change and you were really starting to make way with them and get their attention. So even though it's been such a weird off season and continues to be weird and things are limited in how you're able to connect with your guys, I guess, how have you been able to build upon that with what you started last year?
Well, man, we got to give credit to our guys. I mean, we haven't had any setbacks, you know what I mean? You know, thank God for that. You know, continue to pray and hope that we can stay, you know, free, obviously, with this pandemic going on and the numbers are spiking, that we're all on heavy alert, making sure that these guys try to police themselves and do the right thing so that we can pull the season off. So we've been able to practice. We've been able to have great days in the gym. We're actually, you know, really sick of each other right now. The kids getting testier and testier in practice right now. So I think they can't wait till Friday to where we have somebody else to play against, because they are literally, you know, going at it. So hopefully Friday can't get here soon enough.
One thing that we saw towards the end of last season, your offensive sets got way more effective really before, you know, the stoppage and everything. So how can we expect that progression to pick up where it left off in March and continue to grow?
Well, yeah, man, I just think our guys really have a good understanding of how we want to play, how we want to play offense, how we want to play defense. You know, we got our guys. I mean, I don't try to leave a whole lot of gray area for guys to try to figure out what their roles with. You know, I identify roles. You know, we write them out, we put them on the board. We know who our primary scorers are. We know who our secondary scorers are. We know who our guys want to get downhill. You know who our opportunistic scorers are. Know if you are an opportunistic scorer. You know, score when you get a great opportunity. Otherwise, get the ball to some of these guys that we know that we want to get it to. So, I mean, I think those are things that we try to establish, and our guys are buying in and shit. I'm really, really looking forward to it, man. I think they're excited to play with each other. They're excited to compete and excited to show that we've we continue to progress from how we ended the season last year.
Scottie Pippen Jr. was picked a preseason All-SEC player. I mean, he was somebody that really became a pivotal, a important part of your team last year. What have you seen when some of the early practices out of Pippen?
Yeah, I mean, he's continued to grow, man. He's and he had the ball from day one, so like he knows it's his team. He has to run the team, has to run the show, but at the same time, you know, you don't want to put too much pressure on him to feel like he has to do it by himself because, you know, we got plenty of support in this now. We got freshmen that are going to play, freshmen that are really ahead of the game on the offensive side of the board. They still got to get up to speed a little bit defensively, but you know, Tyron Lawrence, Miles Studi, you know, Trey Thomas, these are some names that you're going to hear this year, and I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised with what they bring to the table, along with the guys that have been in the system, Dylan DeSue, you know, Jordan Wright, those guys that have taken a step, you know, with their physical, just their physical presence. I mean, they look like men out there. Scotty as well. You know, Scotty spent a ton of time with his dad this summer, and you know, whether they were in the gym or in the backyard, I could see the improvements. He has a great understanding of basketball. So I'm still, like, we're still hoping for those 5 inches that Scotty got, but you know, hopefully he don't get it to his junior year, because if he gets those 5 inches this year, it's over. He's out of here too. So I'm tired of losing them.
So spread it out. Spread it out over a couple of years.
Yeah, spread it out over a couple of years, no doubt.
Now, Coach Jerry Stackhouse is here with us from Vanderbilt. We know that schedules are basically written in pencil in the year 2020 and going into 2021, as we've learned with other sports. But what are your thoughts on how this schedule is going to pan out with trying to get all the games in, and then the recent reports that the NCAA may try and put the tournament in one location and try to have somewhat of a bubble?
Yeah, man, I hope we're able to just pull it off again. I think there's a lot of moving parts, and like you said, I think it's, you need to, you know, write with a pencil with a big eraser. You know, so you just know that there's some things that are going to happen during the course of this year that, you know, may change the way the schedule is right now presented itself. But I think our administration, as well as the SEC offices, have done a good job of kind of starting the season early and having a little bit of a buffer in there just in case that there is a setback, that we can still find a way to reschedule games and get this thing off. But you know, right now it's all systems are go. You know, we've got a 9-game, 9-conference schedule. Hopefully we're able to, you know, get all those games in. You know, we started at Valpo on Friday, then we got a tournament up in Connecticut. So, should be some really good tests early on before we, you know, start conference play at the end of December.
Coach, you touched on it a minute ago. You built a good nucleus. Some young players got very valuable experience last year and should be much further ahead to start this year. But you also get a couple of guys eligible that have transferred in to give you a little bit more experience, a little more maturity there. Go into detail about the two transfers that you've got that will be joining you this year, because it sounds to me like you're pretty excited about them.
I really am, man. I mean, Quentin Millard Brown, you know, is a kid that came, you know, was at Rice for a year, and he just, you know, he just felt like he wanted to. I mean, I think he enjoyed Rice, but he wanted a situation where he could get pushed a little bit more, you know, from a basketball standpoint, playing in the SEC, and he's just been everything that we could ask for. I mean, he's gotten better, he's stronger, he gives us a real presence at the five as far as rebounding. He's a good passer. You know, just anchors a lot of things for us offensively and defensively in it. And I think it really frees up Cleavon to be able to, you know, play more four now. I mean, and take advantage of his ability to shoot the ball. So him and Dylan there is kind of like a combo at the four. Obviously, he's going to play some time, get some minutes at the five. Educate is taking a step. And DJ Harvey, I mean, he was a big-time contributor at Notre Dame, you know, understands, you know, the – kind of the height of the level that we're playing at, because he played in the ACC. And he's a guy that we're looking to kind of fill a lot of that role that Aaron had for us last year as a primary scorer, as a guy that we're going to run sets for. And, you know, probably has a little bit more in his package of playing off the dribble than Aaron did. So I think he's a nice little combination, a mix between, you know, what Saban did for us and getting into the paint and finishing around the rim, and you know Aaron's prowess of being able to make shots. So he's good. I mean, and so just hopefully, but it's all these kids, man. You know how it is. Some days I feel like you said we had a great nucleus that came back last year, and some days they look like that nucleus that played a ton of minutes, and then they look like some kids that don't know nothing. So you know, but it's hard. Part of coaching, and that's what, you know, but I think our staff does a good job of making sure that they're prepared, and hopefully this season will be no different.
But you can ask Coach Eddie Fogler. There were plenty of days where I looked like I knew nothing on the court playing for
you
him
know what I'm saying?
For a couple of years. Yes, no question. Probably more than not. But, Coach, lastly, leave us with this. When you have, the showcase of some top players like the program has had, when you get them picked in the lottery, that's got to help you on the recruiting trail, create that vision for players that do want to get the great education and the great experience in the SEC, but also have a goal of going on to the next level. That's got to help you create that vision, doesn't it? That's got to have benefits for the program.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think our league, you know, has benefits. I mean, our program, you know, just with, you know, what we're doing and how we're trying to, you know, every one of these kids, they got aspirations of playing to that next level, you know, and I think that if you come in and work and you know, and you have the talent, you get a shot, not because you're not playing against the best of the best. I mean, we're one of our mainstays are Kentucky, so you're going to play one of the best teams that gets a lot of the top talent across the country, the blue blood, so to speak, you know, twice a year. We're going to play Tennessee twice a year. We're going to play Florida twice a year. So I think that's a huge selling point for us. But, you know, more so than anything, we pride ourselves on kids that want to come here and families who have committed to academics and as well as committed to athletics. And, you know, we're happy when we find that optimal mix. And I think a couple guys that we're bringing in the 21 class that really, really epitomize that. I mean, they're great players from the standpoint of being able to shoot the ball, which is who we, you know, want to build our identity that we want to build our team around, but they have a toughness and the swag about them from just a person, I mean, a kid that you would love to have a great conversation with. So I mean, I think that's the beautiful thing about it also.
Well, Coach, hang in there. I know it's day by day. The challenges are there to get your guys on the court and keep staying prepared. Congratulations on a fun night last night to your two players, and good luck getting it going against Valparaiso here soon.
Man, I appreciate you guys. Thanks.
All right, that's Coach Jerry Stackhouse. Vanderbilt Commodores, they do have the game against Valparaiso scheduled for November 27th. Fingers crossed, as Chase mentioned. Yeah. Everything's in pencil. December 1st, they'll take on UConn in the Legends Classic up in Connecticut. And then that tournament also has USC and BYU. So they would play one of those teams in the other game. So let's just hope. I mean, every day that you get to practice is a good thing. As we reported yesterday, we had Dana O'Neill on. She had in her article over 30 Division I programs currently can't practice, right? And with the contact tracing, it's not just like that day. It can have you for multiple days or even over a week if you get a couple of positives. So let's just hope that every day goes by, we get our fill of college basketball and they can work their way to that NCAA tournament.
I love what he said, though, that, you know, we've been around each other so much, we're getting tired of each other now. That's good.
Yeah,
I like it. They're, and, you know,
really, that's the only way that you can, I mean, you got to be in a tight, you know, quasi bubble, right? You just can't go off and do your own thing. You got to be tight knit. You're going to be spending a lot of time with each other. That's the only way you can keep from picking it up, right? Just stay in your tight bubble.
Yeah. And it's fun, too, because anytime you see, you know, video of him out at practice and he's shooting around with the guys, I mean, he's still got it. Like, he's still got the shot that, you know, he had in his playing days, and that type of teaching that he can give. And he mentioned Scottie Pippen Jr. in the gym with his dad and working on things. I mean, they have a lot of talent that they can work with and a very talented staff. So hopefully the future is bright for Vandy.
Yeah. I think they'll be quite a bit better this year. I don't know if I think they would be surprising if they got into contention of getting into the tournament, but you never know. But I think they just have more numbers. They're not going to be as young. I think the transfers will help. I don't think that they have an NBA draft pick on this team, but I think, you know, with the way he coaches, I think they'll be quite competitive. I think they'll be fun to watch. And as he said, down the road, I think the next year's recruiting class is very, very good. And so I think next year you're hoping for good things. But, of course, day by day, we'll see what happens. We'll take a break when we come back, and we will get back to football when we return. This is Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
November is Hockey Fights Cancer Month, and the Predators Foundation needs your help towards the Smashville Donates campaign. Visit NashvillePredators.com/365Fund to make a donation to the 365 Pediatric Cancer Fund presented by Twice Daily. Purchase Hockey Fights Cancer gear or learn more. You can also bid on silent auction items by texting Preds to 76278. Follow at Preds Foundation on Twitter and Instagram. For more information, welcome back in. Darren Donick and Chase, presented by Blue Note Juke Joint, smoother than smooth. Here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, hanging out with you. Elijah Campbell back at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. And appreciate Jerry Stackhouse of Vanderbilt for joining us. Really good good insight with him, Willie, on a conversation about not only his players being drafted last night, but what he's got coming this year. And I think it, as we said to close out last segment, I think it'll be good to see what they can do here in the future. But let's shift gears to the college football gridiron with some of the games on tap for this week. And we talked earlier about Tennessee and Auburn and how important that one is going to be, really for both teams, but especially for the Vols as they try and get out of this tailspin that they're on. But what are some others in the SEC that stick out to you?
Well, first and foremost, I think we're pretty excited that, you know, knock on wood, we're on Thursday, and it's encouraging that, yeah, I think we're a go. Like, I was really worried. I don't know about you. I was worried that we might have another two or three programs that couldn't play, and you might have another week of cancellations or postponements, et cetera.
I think I saw Michigan State, Maryland got postponed today.
Yeah, I was talking within the league, but yeah, there is one there, as you mentioned. That's one. And the Pac-12 made an interesting decision. They have decided to allow teams that are looking for games to play an extra non-conference game. You can schedule a non-conference game with some stipulations. I haven't gotten all the details on it, but that's been circulating a lot. And I saw Heather Dinich was pointing out, like, a team like BYU is probably making phone calls up and down the Pac-12 and saying, you guys want to play? You guys want to play?
Right.
Because they desperately need to enhance their resume as one of the teams that's putting together a really nice season, but they haven't been able to beat anybody. But let's start with Tennessee-Auburn. Auburn is 11-point favorite, but in talking to a couple people, like, we had a great talk with Paul Feinbaum. He's not overly impressed with Auburn. Like, I feel like there's some optimism for Tennessee people that you could win. This is a winnable game, but we're going to find out. It's at Auburn. Auburn, when they've got their act together, can look pretty good. But you know, I think Auburn fans would be the first to tell you they're pretty fortunate to be 4-2. It could easily look 3-3 or even 2-4.
Sure. And Bo Nix, I mean, that's where it all starts. I mean, we talked yesterday with John Ziener about Bo Nix and how it's in his sophomore year. It's like, okay, it's decent. He's just shy of 1,500 yards passing, 9 touchdowns, but, you know, those numbers don't blow you away. And that's been something under Gus Malzahn of he hasn't really been able to develop the next big thing at quarterback for Auburn, and it could still be Bo Nix, but, you know, he's only a sophomore. But, you know, in the SEC, especially in the West, you expect a guy like that to be your guy right away, and he just simply has not done that as of yet. And so I think that's where the Vols have to start in trying to slow down Bo Nix, because if they do that early, they probably have a chance at this one.
Yeah, I'm looking at his stats week to week. Well, let's just look at him. He starts off against Kentucky, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. He runs for 34 yards, you know, solid game. Georgia the next week, anything but that. And of course, Georgia's defense has something to do with that, but 21 for 40, no touchdowns, an interception. Arkansas, where they win, you know, nothing special. South Carolina, where they lose, and that's the one I think probably has people going, Auburn couldn't beat South Carolina. Maybe Tennessee does have a chance here, but that's the classic, that's the Bo Nix, right? He hasn't really ironed out and become consistent enough to where he can avoid a game like that. Against South Carolina, who's had a very big-time problem on defense, right? He had a touchdown and three picks. He completed only 51% of his passes. So that's the type of game he's got to avoid. Of course, they pull out the game against Ole Miss, and of course they lit up LSU, and he played really well in that game. But LSU, as we know, has got a lot of problems. So I think that's your hope for Tennessee, is you've got to find a way to get him to turn the ball over a couple of times or have a game where he's a little bit off and not hitting the open man, because otherwise, you know, you don't know. And then, you know, it goes without saying, we're all curious to see what Tennessee's going to do at the quarterback position to try to figure it out, regardless of who they play. You know, can they get more? And can they give themselves a chance to make some plays? You know, you figure Auburn's going to score some points down there, right? You're not going to win this game 17-13. You figure you're going to have to score 24, 28 points to have a shot.
Yeah, and when Jeremy Pruitt was noncommittal in his conference call, his SEC conference call on who the quarterback was, you know, I would generally go, okay, maybe he is going to make a change. But honestly, my gut says he's going to end up going back to Garantano. And I don't agree with it, and I know a lot of people don't agree with it, think it's a bad decision. And you know what he is.
Is nobody hinting anything? Like, nobody's hearing anything, tweeting stuff?
Not that I've
seen.
This
is what it looks like. I'm interested in the next couple of days. Do you get a little more sense of who it's going to be? So within the SEC, I don't know that there's a whole lot of intrigue. Alabama should roll. Georgia's got Mississippi State. We know Florida's a heavy favorite here against Vanderbilt. I'm curious to see if Vanderbilt can at least look like they're continuing to make progress, regardless of what the final score is. Do they look like they're getting better? I think that's the question for them.
Right.
And then you've got Arkansas with a chance to maybe, you know, think about their recruiting and their outlook. LSU has really had trouble, so Arkansas is a great opportunity if they can beat LSU. And what a big stepping stone for them as they try to rebuild and rebuild in a hurry. But the biggest games, I think, are in the Big Ten this week. And the underdog picks that we had an hour ago bear that out. Does anybody think Indiana can stay on the same field with Ohio State? And I think also an intriguing game is Northwestern at 4-0 against number 10 Wisconsin, who's only played two games.
Well, I think if you're looking for an upset special, I think Northwestern has a better chance over Wisconsin than Indiana does over Ohio State. I was talking to somebody last night about the Indiana-Ohio State game, and I said, I think that Indiana's good, but I don't think they're Ohio State good. Ohio State good is in a completely different category. And, you know, I know the line's 20.5. Maybe Indiana covers, maybe, but I just think Ohio State has too many weapons on both sides of the ball that Indiana's not going to be able to keep up with. I mean, a 4-0 start for Indiana is huge. They're in the top 10. They've earned it. They've had some big wins to start this season, but this is going to be a big test for them, and Michael Penix is somebody we've talked about a little bit here on the show, and he's had a great start. He's already over 1,000 yards passing with 9 touchdowns in 4 games, but I think they're going to run into a buzzsaw that's going to be hard to overcome.
And then I think the other thing that I will be looking for, because I got to tell you, I was impressed with the quarterback for Wisconsin. I think he's awfully good. And they've only played twice. He's looked really good in both games. But does Wisconsin have enough? Let's say they go in and impressively throttle Northwestern, which would be impressive. Northwestern is not going to wow you with talent, but they're rock solid, right? That's a good Northwestern team. Is they're not going to beat themselves. They're going to be very steady. But I think Graham Mertz and Wisconsin probably a little higher talent level than they've been facing. And so how good is Mertz, right? Can Mertz give you an idea that Wisconsin on their best day could hang with Ohio State? I think if you're Ohio State, you almost want Wisconsin to be really good.
Yeah.
you want some wins that look good.
Sure.
If it's close on, you know, do you let Ohio State in? Let's say they have another game that gets canceled and they've only played six or seven games when it's all said and done. You want to have a good feather in your cap. Wisconsin could be that team.
Yeah, because right now, I mean, the committee's decision, it's going to be tough because you got two teams out of the ACC, Notre Dame and Clemson, that you have to factor in. There's really three teams out of the SEC with Alabama, Florida, and then Texas A&M that you have to think about. And, you know, you can only have two of those teams meet each other in the title game. And so then what do you do with the Big Ten? I mean, if Ohio State's undefeated, sure, and they win the Big Ten, but they're not playing as many games, the level of competition's not the same. So it's the same old argument that we've been making throughout all of this because of the inconsistencies in the schedules and all of that with this COVID year. I agree. I think even if Indiana turns out to be, all right, they're strong, they're a good team, and they give them a game, make it close, and then Ohio State gets that win, Indiana goes on and beats some other good teams. I mean, that only helps Ohio State's cause because of the strength of schedule. So I understand, you know, what you mean there with Wisconsin, but should be interesting. Darren, I think, took Northwestern and silly underdogs. Here's another one. What about Penn State? I mean, James Franklin, 0-4 for the Nittany Lions. They're just awful going against Iowa, and Iowa, a 2.5-point favorite.
Yeah, they have not recovered from the game against Indiana that they had won.
Yeah.
And if it was the classic example of a guy scoring that shouldn't have scored, right? A guy mm-hmm. goes in for a touchdown when Indiana was more or less letting them score, and instead of taking a knee and running out the clock where Penn State had the lead, they score and kept Indiana alive, and Penix from there made some incredible plays. It's one of the most outstanding games that I've seen this year. But if you'd have told me at the end of that game that Indiana would go on and get to 4-0 and Penn State would be winless at this point, I'd have been absolutely incredulous. I would have said, no way.
Right.
No way. But Penn State has not recovered from them. And Indiana clearly is way better, because on that day you're thinking, what an incredible upset, Indiana over Penn State. But as it turns out, it wasn't an upset, right? Indiana is actually a lot better than we thought. Penn State, not as good as we thought. But still, Penn State had the game won.
Yeah.
They gave it back.
They did it, and Indiana was able to build on that. I mean, that happens sometimes, that you have a team that you think they're right there on the edge of good and great, and maybe it comes down to the wire, and they weren't supposed to win. They almost gave it away, but they do, and that knocks something loose, wakes something up, however you want to put it. And now Indiana has really been able to string this together, and then Penn State has gone the other way. So you see both sides of that, of what can happen in those close games. And, you know, James Franklin, I don't know what he does there to turn that around. I mean, I can't imagine what the talks are like in that area. But it has just snowballed out of control for Penn State right now. So some other, I guess, big games, you know, Clemson should take care of Florida State. Florida State continues to be nothing. Clemson losing a few weeks ago to Notre Dame, but I guess Trevor Lawrence back in the saddle here after he had missed a couple games and picking up where he left off, so trying to chase the Heisman. And then another one that was a part of our silly underdog pick, Cincinnati at 7-0, Ryan Porth's Bearcats. They're trying to make their case for the college football playoff, even though, you got to look at the conference that they're in. This could be a big one for them against UCF.
Yeah, well, when you're in that position, and they're not the first, they've been there before. You know, the Boise States have been there before. BYU is in this position. The pressure mounts because not only do you have to win, you have to look good winning to get anybody's attention. Right, and this is not an easy game. UCF may not be quite as good as they've been the last few years, but they're still a good program, and they're playing down there. They don't lose very often down there, but Cincinnati would completely go off the radar if they lost that game. So I'm curious. I still don't really see a pathway into the playoffs for Cincinnati or BYU, But I think what you're hoping for is you complete. I just love to see a team get through unscathed and just say, hey, here's our record. We haven't lost. You know, where does that put us? And just see if they can get into a discussion somewhere and screw things up for everything. And at the very least, get a quality team to play in a bowl game and see if you can pull off a big upset. That's the kind of bowl game that I'll watch, right? And we don't know what the bowl scene is going to look like when it comes down to it, because there's a lot of real worry about where we're going to be during that time of the year before we can get the vaccine going. And, you know, with the holidays and people wanting to, you know, be with family and even traveling in a lot of cases, which is not recommended, but I know people are going to try to do it. You know, can we have these bowl games? I don't know. It's not a given. That's right. For sure.
Yeah. And I think it's like we said with Jerry Stackhouse. I mean, everything's written in pencil. I mean, right now you may plan to have them and some may happen, some won't. I mean, it's just like the regular season as we get into the colder months and around the holidays and people being together. So it's certainly going to be interesting how it all plays out. But those are just some of the big games that we wanted to go over coming into the weekend, and I'm sure we'll have some as a part of Pick 6 tomorrow.
We will. When we come back, I want to ask you too, because I know you both have attended some high school games. We're getting to a point in the season where we got the huge high school football playoff games coming up. We're at the quarterfinal level. I want to just pick your brain on how you think it's gone. And with all that we just said as a backdrop, the caseload going up and the challenges facing everybody, what to look for on Friday. So stay tuned. Let's come back with that. We'll wrap up the show. We'll also touch on some of the Titans news that we've hit on throughout the day and set the table for Jared and the GM coming up at 2. Stay tuned. You're listening to Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This is the end. Beautiful friend, this is the end.
Final segment of the show today. So it might be the end of today's show. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Of course, still got a lot going on the station later today. Don't forget to tune in for Jared and the GM. In fact, we've had our normal Thursday list of excellent guests. We had Paul Feinbaum earlier, Floyd Reese, a great interview this hour with Jerry Stackhouse. If you missed any of those, remember you can always catch those by going to our website and signing up for the podcast. You can pull them up right on your phone. We have really, really had some great interviews this week to get you ready for Titans-Ravens. Great insights on some of the matchups that we're looking for on Sunday. But now I want to turn my attention, guys, to the high school front. You guys loyally cover and have been covering throughout the season this year for high school football. And, of course, we're embarking on the winter sports, which will have some big challenges as well. My son is playing in his team's high school program, and I know they're, you know, looking ahead and trying to work through how do we have a season? How do we do this? You know, can we practice? I've talked to some other coaches too about what they're dealing with. It is not easy for sure. But as we've been saying for a long time, as we push through this, you really feel for teams. And it happened, I think, in four games last week. They had some teams that just could not go to post, right? They couldn't play.
Yeah.
And just heartbreaking. I think about, like, what if I were a senior in high school or the parent of a senior and that happened? But that, I guess that's just the reality of what we're dealing with. And you commend those schools for being able to do the right thing and saying, hey, you know, we hate that this is the case, but we can't go. How are we looking for this week, guys? Do we think we're going to be okay in the quarterfinals? Knowing that there's less teams alive, so there's less games, so you hope that, you know, knock on wood, these games can be played.
Well, and, you know, just to clarify, I mean, because Trent Dilfer's squad at Lipscomb was, I believe their opponent had to forfeit. I mean, that's what happens. Yeah. At this point,
Lipscomb and I think CPA, both of those teams moved ahead because the other team just didn't, they couldn't field the team.
And they just, they don't really have a choice at this point that if your team can't go, it's a forfeit. That's what it is. So they're trying to stay on schedule to get to the Blue Cross Bowl in Cookeville, which is December 3rd through 5th. So trying to get everything on schedule to get to that point and be able to crown some champions. Elijah, you've been – now, I've been the last couple of weeks. I went out to Page High School. They took on Hillsborough, and then I went to Beach High School last week as they took on Hillsborough. My friend's nephew plays for the Burrows, so was out there watching him. And, you know, against Page, I saw a lot of masks and social distancing, and people were doing the right things. There were a lot more people at Beach, and I didn't see as many masks. And so those are kind of the things that you have to look for. Now, on the sideline I was on the stands I was in, everybody had masks on. But as I was walking in, you know, it was very hit or miss what I saw mask-wise. But, Elijah, you've been going pretty much every week to different games. So what is it that you're hearing, and how on schedule are we for this week?
It looks pretty good for this week, at least for the games that I'll be covering. I've been at DCA over in Donelson a lot this year, and they've done a pretty good job of keeping fans separated, people kind of spaced out, a lot of mask wearing. Everyone's there. Everyone there is in a mask. So that's encouraging, and that's how they've been able to play a full 10-game schedule. They had a couple of problems early in the year based on kids being in school, and that was, like, I guess, the biggest variable of this that we couldn't predict was – how are kids going to be able to keep from getting this virus at school? Because the way that the school building is, socially distancing is really hard. So if a teacher has it, then they're in close contact with at least 15 kids, 10 to 15 kids, however large the classes are. And that's where DCA had some trouble this year was, you know, it's just so hard to socially distance in those type of scenarios. But given all of that, they've been able to keep full seasons.
It's a great story, too, at DCA, because I remember last March, Chase, you'll recall, DCA had some pretty extensive, I mean, it was really, really extensive damage
the
to their
was
campus
destroyed.
Yeah, for the tornado. So, Elijah, they're 10-0, which is a great story.
Oh, yeah.
So they've had a great year on the field. How have they done this?
Well, they have a lot of experience, and it helps to have a back like John Lewis, who is a Mr. Football finalist. And he is just a machine. I mean, the guy's averaged almost like 8 yards per carry for the entire season. And he had almost 200 yards in their game, in the first half of their game on Friday night against Trinity. And that game was a running clock early in the third quarter. And I think he reached the 100-yard mark in the first quarter of that game within their second possession. I mean, he's been an absolute machine.
And where are they practicing? Like, what have they done logistically with all the facility damage they have? How have they been able to conduct their business over there?
The practice field's still intact.
Okay,
but their little watchtower they had was destroyed, and they've had to make do without it and rebuild it. At the stadium, the press box obviously was completely flattened, so they moved it to the other side of where it used to be, and so pretty much most of the year it's been plywood, just a plywood box basically that we sit in to cover these games. But now they've been able to get it to where it's painted. It's almost complete. They got to put in some plexiglass in between different booths or whatever for radio. So Friday night there wasn't any windows in between it. So the Trinity radio booth, I was hearing their entire call and everything. You can hear coaches yelling all throughout the press box, which is kind of funny. But at the same time, I mean, they're almost complete. They did a really good job of getting that place really put back together, cleaning up a lot of the damage, and really picking themselves back up. And the field looks nice. They've done some really good work with the field. And I don't know, they've just done a really good job. And, of course, it's a really good story considering what happened in March and then that the football team has been this good. I mean, they're a freight train right now. I mean, really, Friendship Christian's the only one that's really competed with them. That was a 10-point game back in September. And they've basically running clocked every team they've played since.
So. Well, we're excited for them. We're excited for all the teams in the mid-state that are still in the hunt. I watched the game of the week telecast was a great game between Independence and Brentwood. And
how about that ending?
A crazy ending. What a great play that was touchdown.
I'll tell you about this. So I was, like I said, I was out at Hillsborough and Beach. I actually did a TV hit for Fox 17. So I was on the air with Tatum Everett and Dave Foster in the middle of my hit, and they go, hang on, Chase, something's going on here at our TV game. And so they cut away from me, but I can hear the audio that they've cut to the game, and just an incredible ending. And then also around the same time, you had Franklin upsetting Ravenwood. So that set up Brentwood and Franklin.
Wow.
To play each other. And then, you know, I think we got some really good matchups this week. Oakland against Riverdale. So Kelly Holcomb's squad against Riverdale. They've had a good year. They got to take on Oakland.
Yep. Chris Sanders' squad with NBA. They're in action.
Yep. Yep.
In the semifinal.
Davidson Academy, you know, DCA, as we mentioned, plays USJ. So Davidson CPA's Academy plays good, Nashville yeah. Christian. Is that right, Elijah?
I believe that's right.
Yep. So,
yeah, let me double check that.
A lot of teams around that are doing well. And I just want to end with this. Well, I don't know. Maybe we have another minute or two. But I guess we should point this out. You're talking about this amazing finish for Brentwood and Independence. If you didn't see it, Brentwood made – a miraculous play. Their quarterback, and I forget his name, but he actually flipped it. He was rolling out towards the sideline in a desperation play, and he couldn't get an angle where he could throw the ball with his throwing hand. So he flips it underhand to the back of the end zone creatively and finds a guy wide open in the back of the end zone for the winning touchdown.
It was very Tebow-esque.
Yeah. That's maybe a little Mahomes thrown in there, too.
Yeah.
Just figuring it out away. You know, it was good stuff. But I know with each passing week and, you know, your team's getting through, and there's going to be a lot of people that want to go see these games, right? Especially
sure.
at the bigger high schools. So I would just say make sure you take extra precaution and do everything that you've got to do with the mask and everything. I know it's inconvenient, and we've been saying it all year long, but it's so important. You know, people have, you know, you turn on any news station, I don't care where you get your news, they're all saying the same thing with Thanksgiving, everything, the caseload's going up. You want to get together, but you have to be smart about it because we want to make sure these kids especially get to finish their seasons because it's going to be exciting, right? It's going to be exciting if they can do that. But it's not a given. You got to get the job done every day with how you prepare yourself. And everybody affects everybody else, right? You'd hate to see, you know, because of something that happens, you're doing the right things, but just the caseload around you gets into your program somehow, and you've done all this to get this far, and you can't play. So I want to make sure that everybody who loves high school athletics is doing the right things here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Extra precaution. Go absolutely. Extra careful.
And I know Trent Delford joined the morning show and was talking about his game and his team's game against ECS as Lipscomb Academy tries to get to Cookeville as well, and he, you know, echoed those sentiments. So just – Let's work together to get there because looking through the brackets, a lot of great matchups, a lot of mid-state teams represented, and should be a lot of fun once they get to Cookeville starting December 3rd. So looking forward to it.
All right. Tomorrow, we will be on it. We'll have
Ty Sembrio joining us.
Ty Sembrio, who has done an excellent job, and he'll be under the gun again at left tackle. He'll continue to play this week. We'll get a little closer look at him tomorrow. We'll get a chance to chat. We'll set you up with Titans and Ravens. We'll have You Just Made the List. We'll have our pick six. We'll have a lot of fun on our Friday show. So for Chase McCabe, for Elijah Campbell, we'll be back with you tomorrow at 10. And stay tuned here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jared and the GM coming up next. You don't have to go home, but you
can't stay. Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.